All right, 1 minute away. Any more open seats? Any open seats, raise your hand. There's open seats next to people whose hands are open, but you're more than welcome to stand in the back also. Glad to have y'all. Thank y'all for getting up so early in the morning. When you see yourself scheduled for 8 o'clock in the morning, you're like, it's gonna be me and 10 people. So really excited that y'all came. Glad you're here. Hope you had that good breakfast sandwich this morning. It was delicious. All right, it's 8 o'clock. We're gonna go ahead and get started. So my name is Jason Van Nuss. I'm the director of work-based learning and youth apprenticeship programs in Lowndes County Schools. It is actually pronounced Lowndes. That's not just my South Georgia accent. We are about 18 miles away from Florida on 75. So if you've ever gone to Orlando, you've probably driven through my hometown, unless you flew to Orlando and then come by 75, stop on our exits and help our economic development. That'd be awesome. So I'm gonna give you a little bit, and I've given this deck. So one, the deck, I'll put in the app as soon, probably in the airport waiting on my flight. I'm also recording audio, but if for some reason a couple people said they had to leave early to get to their flight, so I will show you a QR code in a second that goes to a little podcast that Buddy and I do, and another version of this is on that podcast. So you can get to the audio whenever you want. The slide deck will be available. If you're just a love taking notes and you're a copious note taker, great, awesome. But I just want you to be engaged. I want you to know this event. This event was started. I want you to go ahead and jump in the presentation. So we'll skip past that boring stuff. Go to I love LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn. I'd love for us to work together. Also, if you think that if you've enjoyed the sessions I've done this week, I would love a little brief. Little endorsement on those things as I try to go out and share this stuff. It helps having that kind of credibility on LinkedIn when I'm applying to do these types of presentations. But also, this is going to put my, this will, if you scan this will put me in your phone. So you have my email, my phone number. You have all the stuff that you can use to get a hold of me. So if you're interested in that, it'll be at the end also. So I'm going to go ahead. I don't see any more phones. This is the QR code to the podcast. A friend of mine in Utah and I do this, and it's called the 2152 Project. That's because his office and my office are 2,152 miles apart. And the idea behind that was work-based learning works better when you can collaborate across states, or even parts across the country. And so we've done a lot of things. We haven't posted an actual guest episode in a little while. I live in South Georgia. We got four hurricanes in 13 months. My area, it was hard to get things up and running. But we're back, we're building, my town caught the eastern eye wall of Helene, and it was devastating. So, podcast was put on the back burner. So for those of you who are followers, we're getting more content out. But let's jump into what we're doing. The pain point, the reason we created this event, we identified a very significant discrepancy in the fact that what we do in our CTE classrooms is we're really good at teaching students the content. The welding students can weld, the healthcare students can triage, they can stick someone with a needle, okay? The construction students can build, the automotive students can repair cars, but what we don't do a good job of, and what I am unaware of if it exists anywhere, is a standard that requires us to teach our students how to self-advocate, which means your healthcare student knows healthcare, coming out of CTE labs, and they perform poorly in their interview because no one's taught them to talk about their skills. So that's the first pain point, is our skill set, the ability to go in and showcase what they do, talk about what they do. And we have to realize this is a different generation that we're teaching, okay? They are not used to face-to-face interactions. And so anytime we can put them in an advocacy scenario where they're having to advocate and do these face-to-face interactions, it's gonna be good for them. So have the skills, can't market the skills. So then step two was, how do I create an event that both forces the student to engage with employers, and here's the most important part, because this is really what CTE is. How can I facilitate a safe environment for them to engage with employers where they can fail in a safe environment? Because if we're not pushing our students to failure, we're not teaching them. You've gotta push them past their comfort zone, push them into failure, and that's where the teachable moments come in. Push them to failure, we're here to help, and so I need to find a way, how can I solve the problem, the pain point, while creating an event that forces them to engage, because what's the traditional career fair setup like? Okay, you've been into the vendor hall. You've got the employers come in, they've got their table, they've got their banners, they've got their stickers, they've got their squeegee balls, they've got their candy, they've got everything they can do to try and entice these kids to come talk to them, right? And what do your kids do? Huh? Some of them snatch it and run, but a lot of them, well, they'll just kind of gather together in the middle of the room while all the employers outline the perimeter of the room, and they won't go talk to them. Why? And we get mad because we haven't taught them how to engage. We're too busy teaching them how to do the skills. We have to, even if your state doesn't have that standard, really encourage you, start teaching your kids how to advocate, particularly, I mean, in every area, regular ed specifically, but really do it with your special ed students. Because one of the really unique pain points about work-based learning in general, not today's presentation, is when we're trying to get a student placed who has an IEP, we're bound by FERPA and can't disclose that information. So we're teaching a 16 to 18-year-old student, we're forcing them to choose between the dichotomy of, do I disclose my IEP 504 to get my accommodations and risk not being hired because private sector doesn't have to abide by IEP and 504 law? I know they're rooted in IDEA and ADA, but they're not the same thing. So we force them to decide, do I self-disclose and advocate for myself so I can get my accommodations and risk not getting the job, or do I not tell them about my accommodations to get the job and then know I'm going to perform poorly because I'm not having my needs met? That's why advocacy is super important. So this is really an advocacy and what I would call a social capital event. If you're not familiar with social capital, it's the fact that 70 to 80% of the jobs that are obtained now start with some type of social capital. You get the interview, you get the resume read because of the social capital, who you know, and then you get the job because of your skills, but sometimes skills aren't enough to get you in that door. We've got to teach our students how to self-advocate. And then three, I brainstormed with a good friend of mine, Susan Fuller. She's from a contiguous county just one north of me. She said, hey, I did something similar to this. What do you think about this? And I said, I loved it. And so we started. So this is kind of the genesis of this reverse career fair. And we do it just a little bit different than you may have heard about it before. So again, our primary goal is equipping students to self-advocate in preparation for job interviews, networking events, or any type of professional communication. Because I noticed our students couldn't do it. They had the skills, but they couldn't talk about their skills. So here's the build-up. And I'll give, at the end, I'm pretty sure I have a link in here for resources. If I don't, then I'll put it in the app. But so here's kind of what I did. Semester assignments. So these are just things that I would do, and I'll walk you through these. One, if you haven't ever heard me speak before, you know I am a massive, massive proponent, big advocate for U-Science. If you haven't spoken to them yet, please go speak to them. I am not on their payroll, but I want to tell you that U-Science is the engine that makes this run for me. It is the best tool in my toolkit. It is phenomenal. So my students take the assessment, which is part of Georgia's Bridge Bill compliance anyway. We take the assessment, which completes that. And then I have them go in and do an analysis. If you were at my session yesterday, the AI session, I actually built an AI bot where the students can upload their U-Science stuff, and then the AI bot will mock interview them and force them to defend their U-Science results because they have to do it when they're meeting with the employers and the alphas in this event. So one is a U-Science analysis. That's one of the things that we do in this semester. Two, an assignment called Greetings, Introductions, and Handshakes. I will literally go hide from my kids. I'll give them a week. Of course, now I'm also doing this with my third level students. We'll get to that in a second, and I'll quantify that. But I'll hide from my kids, and their job's to find me. I'll leave them little clues, so they have to come find me, okay? And then they have to come up to me, have a conversation, shake my hand correctly, and then have a 1 to 2 minute conversation, and it can't have anything to do with school. So it came up, hey, so why'd you become a teacher? Because that's low-hanging fruit. If you or I were interviewing for a job, I am not going to go in there and ask them like something silly, like, hey, so why'd you become an HR manager? Like, that's like, no, I want to know something about them. So I force them to do this for two reasons. One, the greeting, introductions, and handshakes to introduce themselves, but I want to force them to do research on me. So now if you have some skeletons in your closet, you may want to amend this assignment. Luckily, I don't have any skeletons, any public arrests, or that kind of thing. So if I were interviewing for a job, I'm going to research that company. I'm going to research the hiring manager, the HR manager. I want to know. So here's just a real quick example. When I interviewed for the job I have now, I noticed that one of the assistant principals had a business education degree, which is my background. And so I didn't know him, had never met him before, but I continually referenced our similarity because we were business educators. I will also try when I go into an interview, if I'm going to meet people, they're always going to reach out and shake your hand and introduce themselves. One of my tricks is I want to call them by name before they tell me their name. Is that enough to get me the job? No. But if I'm tied with somebody, they're going to say, that guy knew my name. It just makes you stand out. So that's how I'm making the kids do the research. And they'll come and say, hey, Mr. Vanoss, I saw that you played baseball in college. How was that? I saw you spent some time in Africa. You lived over there for 3 months. What was that like? There's enough information on me that they can go out and find, and they have to have something. Ask me questions. It can't just be, how are you doing? Why did you become a teacher? That's not sufficient. We're, again, pushing them to failure. Dressing for success. I'll show you an example of this, but they have to come in and I can't explain this too much without giving away something later, but I give them a PowerPoint, basically, and I give them a video from a partner who's a photographer, and she walks them through. So not just your normal dressing for success, like business professional, business casual, that kind of stuff, but she takes them through a little video that talks about colors of fabrics, the textures of fabrics, and what certain textures mean when you're in an interview, what certain colors mean when you're in an interview, what those things convey. And that blew me away. I'd never heard of that stuff. And so I was like, can you make a video for my kids? She's like, I'd love to do it. So I have a little video from her. I'll demo that in just a little bit. Then I have them develop, they're all about developing a personal brand. If I'm in y'all's way, do I need to move around a little bit so y'all can see? I have them develop a personal brand. So what I mean by that is, one thing our kids do know, and they are good at doing, is they understand personal brand because they have all their peers, all the people they look up to, are social media influencers. They understand what it means when you say build your brand. They understand that. So that's something I drive home with them a lot. Develop your personal brand. And I tell them specifically, and you all know this, that even when you're not selling, you're selling. I particularly, do you know one of the most common ways that people vet employees now is not your resume. I don't want to break your heart. It's not. They are completing what they call a cyber vet of you. They are looking at your social media. They are looking at all these things for entrances into colleges. So I encourage my students, either make your stuff really Loctite private or clean it up. Because people are looking at your personal brand. Who are you when you don't think someone's looking? That's the personal brand idea that we talk about. I had them create a business card. That's simple, low-hanging fruit. The idea is that they're creating a business card for what they want to be, for not what their job is. Because sometimes I have students I'm trying to upskill, so they may be a marketing student who I've got working at Chick-fil-A because they have great customer service skills. If you're not from the South and you don't have Chick-fil-A, it's truly God's chicken. You should try it out. But they're like, it's just great public service skills. I mean, that's that they pour into their employees and teach them that. So I have them create a business card. That assignment is, it's not you working at Chick-fil-A if you want to be someone who's, I'm not saying you have to like do a business card to be a Chick-fil-A employee the rest of your life. You want to be a doctor? That's your business card. You talk about how Chick-fil-A has prepared you and helped facilitate that through work-based learning. And you talk about the skills you've learned in your CTE classes, because I'm not really able to get you a job as a surgeon in work-based learning, right? That's one of those things I've got to find the next best thing. So business card for what they want to be, not necessarily what they are. Now, there are times when I have a fabrication student working at a fabrication facility, and their business card does match what their work-based learning placement is. So we do have that sometimes. I am also a huge fan. I promise you guys, I'm not financially affiliated with YouScience or LinkedIn, but I'm also a big fan of LinkedIn. I would encourage you, evaluate your portfolio process. One of my biggest pet peeves is we put students on what we call a school safe, my air quotes, school safe platform. What are these school safe platforms typically linked to? Their school email address. They graduate and they lose access to their portfolio at the very minute they need it. It's the dumbest thing we do. Why put them on a school safe platform versus put them in an opportunity to go into LinkedIn and that becomes part of our curriculum? Here's how you behave professionally on LinkedIn and not like a knucklehead. That becomes part of our social media awareness. Teaching them how to do that while they're under our control, control's very not the right word, while they're under our influence, and we can say, here's how you do LinkedIn. I can monitor that. Also, super unique. I do a lot of evaluations. I know you have to go do site visits. What happens when you have the best site visit? You go to do a site visit, and it's the best one you've ever had, and what do you do with that site visit and the evaluation? Where does it typically go? In a filing cabinet. So can that student use that evaluation? No. But if you could start leveraging those evaluations, and if your state makes you keep them on paper, fine, but then also ask the employer, or you can go in and put it on the student's LinkedIn recommendation or endorsements page. Now that becomes a perpetual tool that student can use moving forward. 4, 5, 6, 10, 20 years later, they still have that on their resume. So I have my students seek a LinkedIn endorsement from their current employer or mentor, because that's a tool they can leverage moving forward. They have to get the traditional letters of recommendation. Gosh, these next two things are not sexy. They're not going to be impressive, but they're so important. They have a supercomputer in their pocket. I'm going to say a bad word in South Georgia. It really pisses me off. It's about as bad as I'm going to say. It really makes me mad when a student says, I didn't know we had a meeting today. And I'm like, you have a supercomputer in your pocket. Push the button and say Siri or Android. Don't want to offend you Android users. Remind me I have a meeting next Wednesday. They don't know how to use their calendars. They don't know how to use their And so I have them schedule a meeting. All of my meetings, I have email invites I send out to them. And they have to, so two grades, they show up for the meeting. But another grade is I'm showing them how to RSVP for a meeting. They don't know what the RSVP is. They don't even know what the CC on an email means. So that's actually part of my instruction too. I haven't updated this, but I do show them how to send emails and add attachments to emails because they don't know how to do that. Is that the most pressing technology? No, compared to AI, that's super boring. But it's important because that's how businesses still communicate. I'd love to blow an email up. How many of you like to blow your email up? Just get rid of it. I'd love to get rid of email. I hate it. I am not looking forward to Monday when I have a week's worth of emails. But I will say this. I have noticed when you travel for spring break, I actually do enjoy the break because all the emails you get, you can just highlight them and put them in the spam because they're the people who aren't email. They're not from your school system because every email you get that week's from like spam people. So check all, move to spam. But anyway. Scheduling a meeting, calendar appointment, that's a big thing. Sending emails, adding attachments, that's a big thing. Here's the summary of this. Everything I do in this semester for my third level students is designed to do one of two things. One, to create an artifact, the business card, the resume, the letters of recommendation, an artifact they're gonna use at their booth. And two, to produce a skill, the greetings, introductions, and handshake, the email, the attachment, okay? Building the personal brand. So everything I do in the semester is either to build an artifact that's gonna be on their table or to build a skill in them. And I'm very clear with that. So this is what we're doing. All right, so how do I assess it? This is in progress, okay? I've been doing this for 2 years, this event for 2 years. I do one a semester. But how I assess this, their final, is showing up for the career fair, okay? I have them at the end of that event, they have to record a 1 to 2 minute video for the next group coming through the program. What did you do that didn't work? What do you wish you had done differently? What type of questions did the alphas ask you? Just giving feedback. So real short, I mean, you can see, like these kids don't mind being on camera. They just don't want to be on my camera. They want to be on their camera. So let them do it and just submit it. Create a Google Classroom assignment. Students upload that video there. Super simple. I also have them do an exit survey from the event. I'll show you some of that data in a little bit. And then they have to do alpha research. This is one of my favorite things. So the alpha research is I give them a list of all the people I've invited. And they have to go in, and I give them a little template. So it's a little PowerPoint template with a Blake, like a square where they put the alpha's picture. And then two questions or facts about that alpha, because when the alpha walks up to their booth, I want them to say, oh, hey, Mr. Smith, how are you doing? I don't want the alpha to introduce themselves to the student. I want the student to know the person the same way you or I would do in a real job interview, teaching them to do the research, knowing their audience, so that they have to turn in that slide deck. And so this is not a simple thing. I'm inviting sometimes 60, 70, 100 people to this event, and sometimes 50 show up. So are the kids really happy when they develop research profiles for 100 people and only 50 show up? No, but I'm not happy either when I spend 3 hours memorizing a whole HR's board and only 3 show up to my interview. That's just part of life. You gotta be prepared, right? So I have them do that. The midterm, they have scheduled professional headshots with a photographer, so each one of the students have a professional headshot they can use to market this for this event and moving forward. They also have to schedule a meeting with me to review their U-Science assessment analysis. And then everything else I showed you in the previous slide is just their daily assignments, okay? So this is not a heavy lift in terms of the quantity of assignments. It's the heavy lift on the terms of the quality. They're having to make these things look good, and I tell them that from the beginning. If you don't do this well, you are going to be embarrassed. I'm not trying to shame them, but isn't that real life? If you and I both go into an interview, and you are so prepared, and I'm not going after you, I'm gonna be embarrassed because you blew it out of the water. That's we have to introduce some competitive elements into our school systems. Because we're trying to keep these kids in a greenhouse and then put them in the workforce where they're only going to get these things through competition. Let them compete. Let them say, I'm not as good as this person. I should have done better. That's also not as good as the person. I didn't perform as well as this person. And they can see that. And I've had students come in. You can tell the students who haven't done the assignments the way I've asked them to. They put their booth together 3 days before the event, and they're next to someone who wants to be a landscape excavator who's built a sandbox, who's got a remote control excavator, and he's letting people play around in the sandbox, and they're over here with a crayon-colored trifold. That's real world. And afterwards, I'm like, hey, can you see now? Like, yeah, I was embarrassed. Yes, you should have done better, because that's what real world is, right? All right, so I want to go quick with partnerships. So just to show you the type of people and I invite, and I don't want to offend anybody, because we're all in here educators. We're valuable. But I didn't want this to be an event where their teachers come in, because quite honestly, they don't care. And they love you, hopefully, but you're not like a needle mover for them. I wanted to bring in needle movers. So I brought in people. This is one of our House of Representatives at state level. This is the Georgia Power Public Service Commissioner. Uncopious amounts of influence and power. This is someone who is a public fundraiser, and this is one of our dual enrollment coordinators. And how many students are at this table? I was like, have you ever seen the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade where the guy drinks the ugly cup and he's like, you chose wisely? I was like, brother, you chose wisely. You picked the good table. And he picked the good table because he did his research and he knew who they were. So he made a good decision to sit next to a bunch of people who could move the needle. So partnerships are really, really important. I couldn't do this without CJB, okay? They're a local chemical company who I've placed a lot of my AP chemistry students with as wet lab apprentices. They sponsor the event. Now, you can do this event for free. If you decide to do this event on your school's campus, you could do it for free. I choose to have it off campus because I want to have it at the Rainwater Center. It's our conference center. I want the kid, I make them a field trip all day. They show up at 9:30, get their stuff ready. Event starts at 10, ready to go. But you could do that on your school's campus. Rainwater donates the space. If you've ever dealt with conferences, we're here right now. I don't want to offend anybody, but the space isn't the most expensive part. The expensive part's the food. So Rainwater, they say, look, we'll give you the space, and you don't have to have food. We'll give you the space for free, but if you want to have food, and I do have a meal component, it needs to come through us. You can't bring in any outside food. I said, that's fine. So CJB covers the food portion. So I do want to make sure I say thank you to them every time I give this presentation, because this event couldn't be possible with them. This is not a presentation on partnerships, but partnerships are what makes this event work for me. Then this is unique. The power of LinkedIn. I've already mentioned that, right? The first time I did this in the fall 2 years ago, I posted this on LinkedIn with some marketing material, thanking the people who came. Thank yous are super important. And then I get a inbox message, which means that we weren't connected. And this lady was like, hey, I saw this event. That's really unique. I'd love to be a part of this. How can I help? And I was like, I don't know. What do you do? And she said, I'm a photographer. And I said, yes, you can help. I want you to donate a sitting and headshots to all of my students who go through this program. She said, I'd love to do it. So that's the power of LinkedIn. I wasn't looking for her, and she wasn't looking for me, but she saw the content, reached out to me, and said, hey. So now each kid gets a $700 package for free. They get a sitting. They get six poses. They pick one pose, and based on that one pose, they get four different image types. So they look like this. These are not models, by the way. These are my real kids. This is how good she is. So they get this, which is this up here is the LinkedIn banner. They get one where the background is ripped out, like these two right here, no background. They get one that is, this one right here is a square, the cowboy hat. It's the square, because some social medias like just the square image. And then the other two in the top right corner, those are those are like 8x8.5x11, regular paper size, okay? So they get six poses. They pick the pose they like the best. Then they get four images. They use that to market themselves on LinkedIn, on social media, and at this reverse career fair. If you don't have a professional photographer who reaches out to you on LinkedIn, you can just take pictures. And the cool thing is, even in my session yesterday, you know that AI can do all this stuff for you as well. Now, it's probably not going to be as high end, but AI can do that stuff for you as well. All right. So here's a real quick, I mentioned that video she did for me. I want to show, I'm not going to play the whole thing. This is just I think it's a 1 minute clip. I'm going to show you what she did to help these students learn more than just suit and pants and dress and like she went all out.
I'm going to show you examples from clients of mine who've come in to have their headshots. So let's take a look. Here's client number one. This was her actual headshot before she came into the studio. She's wearing a t-shirt and she's looking pretty casual. But she's also the owner of a business. She wants to be a virtual assistant. She wants to be your virtual assistant. And this is the stuff that she's going to be in charge of. These are the skills that she says she has. Now compare her headshot to what she says that she is. There's a disconnect. And I'm telling you right now that if you give someone a reason to disconnect from you, they're going to take it because a confused mind says no. So after she came in for headshots, this is...
Oh, the best part. We're building drama. We're building drama, anticipation. Oh, I can't go now. Like, we got to fix this. What's happening? No.
Says no. So after she came in for headshots, this is...
Technology fail. All right, let me refresh it real quick and to see if I can get it. I'm going to do that real quick. I really want you to see that. The difference is amazing. It really is. Everybody get off the Wi-Fi. Let's build it up again. It really is the best part because, like, it's a big difference.
Understanding all the parts to your story.
Yeah, it's getting that same spot.
I'm going to show you examples of us.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
These are her headshots now. We have her in a formal business wear in a gray dress. We have her in a slightly less formal business outfit with the satin blouse and the tan slacks. And we have her completely business casual in the red outfit. But all of them fit the three words that she wanted: competent, professional, and friendly.
So what she did, she asked the students to come up with three words, and three words before they went through her content, three words, and then the whole premise was saying, how does what you're putting out for people to see communicate and relate to those three words? So this lady's words, and so she's a really unique photographer, does a lot of really hands-on stuff, but she's like, how does the pictures you want me to take address those words? And if they don't, let's change the pictures. So really unique stuff. Again, you'll have access to this all afterwards when you have your own better Wi-Fi. Now, this is unique. I'm doing this for the first time in 2 weeks. So you'll see in the data, some of the data that I got back from my students, when I said, what was your favorite part of the event? They told me, what was your least favorite part of the event? I didn't get many negative answers in the whole survey. I will say this, my students hate this event until they do it, and they're like, oh, that was awesome. That wasn't bad. But they hate, you know why they hate it? Because I'm pushing them to failure. They don't want to do this. They want to sit in the back of the room and write a paper. They want to build something. They don't want to go interact with people. We've got to force them to. But in the data, and this is my fault, this is my fail. We do that as teachers all the time. This is a successful event, but I failed. There's a meal portion to this event, and all of the negative comments I got were, I don't know how to eat. One of them was pretty funny. Why are there three forks at my place? That's my fault. I didn't teach you that. So I'm bringing in this company. They're going to do what they call a social intelligence, where they're teaching them posture, how to use your hands when you're talking, eye contact, tricks, how to remember names. Then we're going to take a little break. Then they're going to come back. They're going to do a dining etiquette portion. And then I'm going to pay my culinary program to cook for us. By the way, if you didn't know this, you can't use Perkin funds to feed industry, but you can use Perkin funds to teach your culinary kids how to cook filet and asparagus and then just serve it to industry. You can do that. So what we'll do is we'll bring them in. That's a QR code to their website. They trap that. Look, they are a small company, but they are not small time. They do trainings for Fortune 500 companies all over the country. So if you're ever interested in bringing them in, they're really affordable for what they offer. I don't get kickbacks for them either. They're just good partners with me. I want you to know that QR code takes you right to their website. They're out of Athens, Georgia. I'm an Auburn alum. That's not my favorite either, but it's okay. Anyway, so they're phenomenal partners. They're so much fun. I've been through two of their trainings and in some leadership academies. They're really good, okay? Now, here's the target audience. So I told you how we did the event. Here's who I target. Now, the way I do my work-based learning program is we have one of the larger programs in the state. And so my first-year students go through a specific curriculum that I built. Second-year students go through a specific curriculum I built. This is for my third-year students. They're on the precipice of graduation, so they need this content really, really, it's imminent for them. But two, it's a smaller group of students. So they're anywhere from 20 to 25 students in this third level, okay? Where I've got almost 200 students in my first level. Why do I want a smaller group? Well, it's like trying to steer a raft in a swimming pool or a cruise ship. I wanted to be able to turn and manipulate the event if I needed to. So I wanted to start small, and then I said, wait, this just worked really well. Let's just do it this way. So we're going to keep it with that third level event. That's the target audience is my third level students. But then also the target audience are these industry alphas. Now, I use the term alpha not to be discriminatory, but I don't want pretenders at this event. I want politicians, chamber of commerce, mayor, superintendent, county commissioners, city managers. I said, that's who I want, business owners, because I want the kids to feel nervous. They're not going to be nervous introducing themselves to their third block teacher. They know them. I want them to feel nervous. But in doing this, I'm going to be honest, I'd like to say I planned it this way, a stroke of just genius marketing. It wasn't, I backed into it, okay? I wanted students to showcase their skills and prepare them, but what I didn't realize was going to happen was how much the industry was going to love it and how much it was going to market to the industry. I didn't think about this as a marketing tool to industry to see what my kids can and can't do, but that's what it was, because they come in here like, holy cow. Like one of my kids that we've worked with is an engineering student, and his grandfather was hearing impaired. And he saw that growing up, so he 3D printed some glasses, used Arduino motor and a Bluetooth module, built an app so he could lay the app right here next to you, and you could be talking and he could walk across the room, put on the glasses, and his app is going to translate what you speak and throw it on the glasses. Okay? That I can't do that. I can't teach that. That's next level stuff. But when industry sees that, they're like, wow, these are high school kids. And I'm like, yes, I've been trying to tell you. Our kids can bridge the gap in all of these critical labor shortage industries. But what's happening is people, one, we're not championing our programs, but two, our industries are ignoring a untapped segment of the labor market. There's nothing that keeps people, even in manufacturing environments, from hiring kids under 18. OSHA doesn't care, they care about safety rating, and workers' comp doesn't care, they care about your mod rate. Now, there are some things kids can't, they can't work with explosives, right? Yeah, okay, obvious. But they can work on roofs. Georgia has exemptions for seven of the 17 things that are hazardous occupations as defined by the Fair Labor Standards Act. So we've got to tell this story. I didn't think about this as a way to market to industry alphas, but it became that. I was marketing to industry alphas, and then guess what happens when you, and again, the benefit of having actual needle movers, and please don't confuse a title with an alpha. There's a lot of Charlies and Betas who've got big titles, and the person calling the shots is somewhere down the line, right? If you're from a rural area, who makes things happen in your community? South Georgia, you know who it is sometimes? The farmer who owns the most land. It ain't the mayor. The mayor sometimes, not my mayor, Scott, you're good, I promise. Sometimes the mayor is beholden to the people who call shots. So the alphas, get the alphas in the room. Who moves the deal in your community, okay? So here's the three-part design. This was intentional. One, the first part of this event is the reverse career fair. So, like I said, if you've been to an area, I mentioned this earlier, a career fair, your employers line the walls of the room, you release students in, and the employers don't have a good time because the kids aren't comfortable engaging with them. So they've sacrificed a day of profit to come in and work with their students, and no one came and talked to them, or very few came and talked to them. Okay? The students don't have fun because they're not prepared to go engage with people. It's awkward for them. Now, not a good awkward, a bad awkward, okay? There's difference. So what's the flaw with a traditional career fair? I've already kind of given that away. You can't force engagement. Now, you can do games like play bingo and that kind of stuff, but even if you're playing a career booth or a career fair bingo, the kids are only going to get their thing stamped. They're not engaging. There's a difference, but you can simulate engagement or you can have engagement. I didn't want to simulate engagement. I wanted the students to actually go and be able to talk to the alphas and share their skills and market what they do. That's what I wanted. And career fair bingo is not going to do that. Okay? Same thing. Look, let's all be honest. You've been to conferences that do career fair bingo. You're doing it just to get the prize. How long do I got to talk to you before you'll stamp my thing, right? You're not engaging. You're not actually listening to the vendor's pitch. You're just there to get your stamp and then turn it in, hopefully, with that gift card. I didn't want that with the students. So that's the thing. The students spend the semester not only going through my assignments, but also building their booth. Now, I do not give them a rubric for their booth. And some traditional teachers are going to be very upset with me for that. But I was intentional for that. If I give them a rubric and I show them on the rubric a trifold, guess what I'm going to get?
Right.
30 trifolds. And so I just said, you find a way to market yourself and your skills. If it includes a trifold, great. If it doesn't, that's fine. But remember, you need to look better than the person next to you. And I'm leveraging that social component in their assessment. I don't want to tell them, I don't even like to give, like, Mr. Give us an example. And I was like, I'm not going to give you an example. Because if I give you one example, that's all I'm going to get from you. I make them create it from scratch. And it's been awesome. And I'll show you some examples. All right? So what we did was we flipped the roles. Now the students build their booths, the students line the walls, and I release industry into the room. And industry goes and talks to kids. I can force engagement because the students know how to market themselves and sell their skills. And industry is like, this is amazing. And I have to tote all my stuff in here. I show up, no prep, and I just go talk to people. That's what they're good at. Then have a little QR code on each student's booth that's unique to them. As they exit the student's booth, they'll scan the QR code and they will leave anonymous feedback. Now, why do I want this feedback anonymous? I have elected officials and I want someone losing a vote because they were mean to my baby. So it's all anonymous feedback. But that's important. I want to protect my alphas. So just flip the roles. The students, it's their assignment is to build the booth, market their skills, learn how to do this, and then release the alphas into the room. And they get to do what they're good at. They get to do what they're good at. And I'm not belittling alphas, but they're not often the teachers. They're in industry for a reason. So you leverage the students as the teacher-esque, the recruiter-esque person, right? And let alpha just walk up and talk. Now, this was not designed as a hiring event, but guess what it became? A hiring event. Again, I'd like to say that I built this. I will say the difference between, now, I called it a career fair for a reason, reverse career fair. So if you don't know the difference, a career fair is an exposure or exploration event. A job fair is a hiring event. So it's not a job fair unless people are committed to hiring your students on the spot. So that's why I called it specifically a career fair, was because this was just meant to be an exposure, training, and advocacy event. It was not designed to be a hiring event. But you know as well as I know, your students are impressive. They can do stuff. Like, they can do all the things. And the industry sees that too. And so they start hiring them. So that's the first part of this event. The second part of this event, well, actually, so here's the QR codes, what happens. First semester, I did this. I did an actual evaluation rubric. It was a nightmare. Don't do that. Do a Google form. Publish the link, make it public, turn it to a QR code. Much easier because I had 50 alphas with 21 different sheets, each sheet for a different student, and I had to go through and take all those sheets from alpha 1 through 20, then get alpha 2 sheets, 1 through 20. I ain't doing that again. So I went and did a Google form, and now it looks like this, okay? As soon as the event's over, I'll go in, share the form with the student. They can see the feedback. They can see it qualified over here. So there's your qualitative data, and then you've got your quantitative data here where they're evaluated. Again, all anonymous. So this young lady did really well at our reverse career fair in our second semester. The second thing is the plated meal, okay? Why did I want to do a plated meal? That's a big part of workforce, right? How you get recruited. If I don't know if you've ever read this book came out before political stuff, but if you've ever read Hillbilly Elegy, and you see J.D. Vance when he was graduating law school, and he went to the recruiting meal, and he didn't know what the forks were, he had to call his wife, he'd be like, why are all these forks here? He was graduating law school and had no social training at a dinner meal. So that's part of it, but it's more than just that. Let me get a sip of water real quick, sorry. It's more than just that. You've been in business. So that's just case in point. You go to a conference and you've gone to Christy Valesky's session. She's one of the best presenters, brightest work-based learning minds ever. She's a consultant. She's phenomenal. Good friend. She's phenomenal. You go to her presentation. That's the formal presentation of the skills, right? You see how good she is. You say, we're going to bring her into our school system and have her do some work-based learning training. That is, once you've seen the formal presentation, then everything else, contracts are signed at restaurants, some of us at bars, but I can't teach my kids that, can I? Sometimes at a golf course, sometimes at a Zoom, in a more casual setting. I want the students to learn the formal presentation of their skills in the networking session, the formal presentation, but I also want to give them the casual opportunity to sit back and actually have more casual conversations with the intent and the caveat that even when you're not selling, you're selling, okay? So if you're stabbing your chicken like this and cutting like this, that's a big deal, right? This allows for that follow-up networking where decisions are made. You see the skill sets presented at conferences, at presentations, but checks are signed in a more casual environment. So that's the second part. And you can see here, we've got another one of our elected officials, Representative Sharper. We've got owner of an educational consulting company. And we've got Tony, are you here? This is Tony May. He's Alabama's Department of Education's specialist for work-based learning. So I've had people come from Alabama. I've got two coming from South Carolina this year. I've got a couple who are probably coming from Illinois down to see this event. If you're interested in coming next semester, or if you got the flexibility and you can come May 7th, the event, let me know. I'd love to have you come down. You could fly right into Valdosta from Atlanta, okay? But it's gotten to the point where I did this just to meet my kids' needs. And as I put it on LinkedIn, people are like, I want to be involved. Can I come see it? We want to replicate it. Has anybody in here been this before? Where are we at? I told her she might not need to come. But I've had two people here who actually saw this presentation at Vision, and since Vision have implemented this event at their school. Okay, so it's real cool. I'll give you all the resources I've got. But it's interesting just to see how it's a plug and play event. You don't have to really do anything extra. You even have to have all the assignments if you want. You could do a one-day training and prepare the kids to do this. The hardest part is holding the alphas to their RSVPs. If you know how to do that better, then let me know. Now, the third part is the alpha bingo research. So I told you I had them do the alpha research. Here's how I get them to do the research. One, it's a grade. But for those students, and look, I work with a lot of kids who are welders and construction kids, electricians. They don't care about grades. They just want to get out and work, right? So sometimes grades aren't the best motivator for them. Money works. So I would go out and I got a sponsor, Hunt Industries, who's also now the sponsor for bringing down. Hunt Industries got involved in just giving me $200 bills each event. Okay, and because they got involved, now they wanted to be more involved. And so now they're the ones who are bringing down Perfectly Polished to come in and do the etiquette training. So what I do is I give them a bingo card. A randomized bingo card from all the alphas that have come to the event. So they get a bingo card. It's different than all their peers. And when the alphas come to their booth, their job is to either call them by name, but do it quietly, right? Because they'd be like, hey, Mr. Smith. All the kids are like, well, it's Mr. Smith. Okay? So you do it quietly, discreetly. But if you call them by the right name and you get their name right, then you give them their bingo card. They initial their card, give it back to you. The first one to get five in a row gets a $100 bill. The first one to either finish completely, which I haven't had happen yet, or the one to get the most done gets another $100 bill. Okay? So it's a grade. I try to make it fun for them. Here's a little trick I'll tell you I've learned after the first event. Look, our kids may not be academically smart because they don't want to do it, but they're smart. So I had one little kid and his friend were like, hey, look, I'm gonna go get them all wrong. And when they cross out their name, I'm gonna tell you who they are and we're gonna split the $100 bill. And I was like, you son of a gun. Touche. But hey, look, that all jokes aside, I celebrated that because I gave them, I didn't give them the correct parameters, and that's the higher level critical thinking we should be rewarding. Was I upset? Yeah, but not at them, at me. That's the higher level. That kid, he's academically lazy, but he's bright. He'll be successful. Okay, so now what I have them do is if they get the alpha wrong, they don't cross out their name, they cross out the name of who they thought they were. One, it makes it harder to cheat, but two, it makes them have to get another area. Because if I think you're John and you're the last person for my bingo, and you're like, oh no, I'm not, I'm Bill, I gotta find a whole new line of five now. So it multiplies the event if you had them cross out who they thought you were versus who you are. That makes sense? So forces conversations, and here's another thing, it forces them to listen. It forces them to listen because they're not just talking, but they're asking questions and listening because they may not have been able to find a picture. But if they know there are only four elected officials at the event, and one of them is also a local business owner, once they get, they can start asking those probing questions. Well, what do you do? Well, I'm an elected official. And so, okay, well, what do you do for a living when you're not in session? Well, I own, you're Mr. So-and-so. I'm teaching them all the things that we have to learn as professionals that no one taught us. We had to learn because we messed up too many times. Didn't get the job enough times. The RSVP list, they're having to go through all of these things. When my judges come in, they have name tags that say judge number one, not their name. Now, the hardest part, again, the first time I did this, I still had judge number one, but all these alphas know each other. They're at the development authority, they're at chamber meetings, they're at rotary meetings. And so they got judge number one, and they walk in like, hey, Bob, how's it going? And I'm like, shut up. That's judge number three. That's judge three. But I had kids who picked up on that. Again, reward, if the kid is astute enough to hear an alpha call another alpha by name, good for you. That would work for us in industry. If I didn't know someone and I'm listening to a conversation, we shouldn't do that, but we do. And I can go to him, but hey, Bob, how you doing? And pretend like I know him. There's a conversation. That's astute, right? So these kids are going to help you develop this curriculum. The prizes, again, are $100 bill. These are the first two winners. I had one, the first event, each one won one. And then the next event, I had the same girl win both. She was like, she memorized those people's faces. It was really cool. This is kind of the bingo card. This is the first one. Again, I was building the plane as we were flying it. The bingo cards look better now. I'm ashamed to show you this because I am a graphic designer. but I went down here and just went to a free bingo creator and just did it. If you are a graphic designer, you could do some variable data implementations if you want to do that. But there's a lot of really cool bingo card designs. So this is what the alpha looks like. I show them the people's names, which for some reason aren't shown, where they work, and then where they're from. And so they can go through and check these off as we're going in and doing that, okay? So the alpha instructions, first semester, again, I learned, I sent them an email. A nice, bulleted, concise email. Like, I was really proud of that. And here's what it's supposed to look like, here's what you do, and then guess what happened the day of the event? The alphas walked in and said, hey, what are we supposed to do? They don't want to read an email. To me, that's concise for a school email, at least in my system. But they didn't miss. So the next year and following years, I picked one day, and I've done 10-minute Zooms 5 times a day. Pop in when you get a chance. They would rather hear me tell them than read an email. So I just pick one day. Like when I'm doing my paperwork or my reports or grading, 5 Zoom meetings, 9, 10, 12, 32, and 4:30, okay? They should be able to come to one of those trainings. Real simple to do. Alphas could pick the one that fit their schedule the best. Now, here's the event feedback. We're getting close. I'm going to try and hurry up so we can ask. I can take time for questions. Event feedback. This is where it's fun to me, right? Alphas. Alpha feedback. Asking them to rate the effectiveness of the event. 100% thought it was either very or extremely effective. 76% in the extremely effective category. The concept of the reverse career fair. 100%, extremely or very effective. 86% thought it was extremely effective. If you are interested in the qualitative data, you can scan that QR code. It'll take you to their anonymized feedback. Now, this is interesting. Alpha feedback on the time frame of the event. Almost 30% of my employers and alphas said the event was too short. What? We have to beg people to come to meet with our students, and I've got 30% saying I want to spend more time at this event. I want to be here more because they don't have to do any prep work. So 30% of my alpha said I wanted more time with the kids. I didn't want to cut the networking part short to go to lunch. I didn't want to leave the lunch short. And I was like, well, I got to get the kids back. They got to go to work. They still work, right? So I had to be done by 1:30 so they could all go to work. So I was really impressed by that. They wanted to give more time. Here's the student feedback. This is fall 23. Now, I'm going to be honest. There were two kids who gave me some negative feedback, but I could have picked them out before the event happened. We all know those kids, right? 100% of the students thought it was an overall effective event. 18% thought it was effective. Everybody else thought it was either very or extremely effective. Same thing with the effectiveness of the booth presentation. That's a, what was your favorite part, the booth or the lunch? Okay, those same kids. But you look at 46%. Two thought it was somewhat effective, okay? So at any time, a negative feedback is still somewhat and not, this sucked, which I tell them, to be honest, like, don't cuss at me, but if you hate the event, then tell me. And the most negative event or effect result I got from this question was I had 9% tell me that it was somewhat effective. And the lunch portion, look, now I told you earlier, I was honest, the data for the lunch portion was higher for negative input. Why? Because I messed up. I didn't tell them how to eat in front of people. So it wasn't the good awkward, like I talked about earlier. It was the bad awkward, like, I don't know what to do, right? And so that was my fault. 90% of the students in the first event said they felt better prepared. Again, those two students. Better prepared to go through networking, interviews, job preparation, okay? That's fall 23. I'm going to skip spring 24. I will say 100% of students said they thought and they felt better prepared. I'm going to go to, there's again, fall 24 students. But I want to go to, let me get to the next one. I think I have, yes, year to date. Year to date, 98% of the students in the 2 years said, and again, those same two students, feel better prepared to network for interview for a job event. It's good. It's good data. It's fun data because anytime, like, we worked hard for events that don't work and we're broken about it. But when you work hard for an event and it does work, and then it gets eaten. And the good part of the lift is done. I've got my list. I've got my curriculum. I've got my alphas. They get an email every semester. All I got to do now is just run a script and it runs. It sends the emails, takes RSVPs, does all that stuff for me. This event is on autopilot except for industry feedback. Like when he said, hey, I want to help you bring in someone to do this etiquette training. All right, so here's some of my favorite quotes. What was your least favorite part of the event? Looking at the results. And I was like, hey, brother, me too. Me too. That's a tough part of the event, looking at the results. Two, maybe the eating, because I never really learned how to properly eat. And I said, buddy, that's my fault. That's my fault. Preparing for the event, very stressful. But this young lady said preparing for the event was stressful, but once I got into it, it was fun. Once I got into it, it was fun. Okay? So here's some other favorite student quotes. What was your favorite part of the event? Showcasing my skills. Being able to be a sales, now this guy's not a wordsmith, but you know what he's saying. Learning how to sell my skills. Meeting new people that can give me valuable advice. And I was like, buddy, that's it. That is social capital. The student knows I have given them access to the biggest, most influential people in my community, mayors, elected officials, county commissioners, business owners. And he took notes. He's like, I can call on these people now. We are a network now. And I was like, that's it. You got it. That's the whole purpose for the event. Is learning how to leverage your skills to build social capital. Because some of our kids don't have social capital. Some of them have one parent. Some of them have no parents. Some of them have two parents who don't do anything, and they can't leverage their connections to get them the right job. We've got to teach them how to leverage their and create their own connections. That is exactly what we wanted to do. So real quick, key takeaways, and then what time is it? Oh, we have a few missed questions. One, listen to your industry. They told me your kids are skilled. They crapped the bed in the interview. We got to fix it, right? Two, include them in the preparation and the event itself, in planning the event. Three, challenge your students. Challenge them. Push them to failure. Not failing your class, but make them fail and then show them how to not fail the next time. And then last one, rethink. The efficacy of the traditional career fair compared to this event is inefficient. It is inefficient. I've done both. This is a little bit of a heavier lift, but once it's done, it's done. And your industry aren't begrudgingly participating. They want to come and be a part of this. So rethink it. Is the traditional practice of what you're doing in the classroom, is there efficacy in it? Push past it. The reverse career fair, it's just a better model. And I'm not saying that because, like, there are other people in the country who are doing reverse career fairs. Mine's a little bit different. But I didn't create this event. I just kind of polished it and did it my own way. You can take this model and do it your own way. But it's just a better model. All right. So I think that should be it. Any questions? You've got about 5 minutes for questions about how we did it. Yes, sir.
What are they actually presenting to
the alpha? Yes. So great question. They're presenting, they're marketing their skills. That have them put the youth science data on their board. I have them leveraging, so they say, here's some of my references. I can tell you what these are. One of them is from my current boss. He talks a little bit about X, Y, Z. So they're just learning the ability to sell themselves. Whatever they want to sell is up to them. Are they selling their skills as a potential surgeon, as a nurse, as a welder? I did drop the ball real quick. So I want to show you this because remember I told you I'm really embarrassed. I want to show you one picture that I didn't qualify. Where is it? Yes, right here. Okay, look. So remember I told you I did not want to tell them what to do because they'd bring me all trifolds? This young man was an electrician. He didn't bring a trifold. He built a 4-foot by 6-foot wall to code with a panel, wired a ceiling fan, wired a light, wired a switch, and brought in a charger so that while the alphas were talking to him, he said, would you like to charge your phone? Hey, and here's the best part. And I love this kid. One of my worst academic students. Not because he's not smart, but because he wanted to go build stuff and be an electrician. I could not get this son of a gun to turn his timesheets in, but he brings in a wall to code. For his visual, right? That's what this is about. So that's why I don't tell kids, I don't give them a rubric for their presentation. I say, you sell your skills however you want to sell them. And man, he was the hero. They're like, this kid got it. I was like, yeah, he got it. And I was so worried he was going to not show up. Any other questions? 2 minutes. Yes, ma'am.
Time frame?
Oh, okay. So I start, the students can get there anytime from 9 on. The event is from 10, networking is from 10 to 12:15. Then I give them a 10-minute break, and then lunch is from 12:25 or 12:30 to 1:15, 1:30. Then they go home. Yes, ma'am.
Is it at your high school?
No, I have it at the conference center because I don't want to have it at the high school because I want it to feel like a separate event. I want them to be engaged. Yes, sir.
For the photo shoots, the kids bring their own outfits to change?
Yes. The photo shoots, the kids bring their own outfits based on her video where she talked. I didn't show you the whole video. It's 15 minutes, but she talks about textures and colors and patterns and how to match them. And so their job is to watch the video and to build outfits that can come in and communicate their three words. If they have issues with outfits, then I have some areas to go in and get them correct clothes. Yes, ma'am. All right, so this semester, this is a smaller group. It's my third level. So anywhere between 18 and 29 this semester, it's a smaller group. But again, I can't do this for the first semester, 180, 190 kids, because it's $35 a meal. I can't afford that, and I can't ask sponsors to give me $10,000, $15,000 a semester. So it costs me about $3,000 to $4,000 per semester. That's taken care of by one of my sponsors, and that's one of the reasons I keep it small. It's a great question.
Are your third levels, like, are they junior, senior?
It depends. So great question. The way I run the program, I don't care how old you are. The third level means that it is your third semester with me on the block. So sometimes a first semester student could be a sophomore who's 16, or it could be a senior who's in their second, spring semester. So I don't care how old you are. Your first semester in my program, your first level, second semester, your second, third, and I've actually gotten to fifth level, which means I've had three kids, the cowboy hat's one of them, three kids who've been in my program since they were sophomores in high school. They've worked with me every semester that way. So that's how we escalate the levels. That's another good question. Yes, ma'am.
How many employers or industries
in your students
do you have?
At this event or in general?
At the event.
Okay, I 40 to 50 end up showing up. But I, every semester I have anywhere from 200 to 300 individual employers who are employing my kids, but a lot of those are on the first and second semester kids. Okay, so a great question. At the seating event, I told the alphas to sit no more than three alphas per table and force them. The picture I showed you of the four alphas was because one had to leave and then came back for dinner. And I just said, you sit there, because the kid already made a good decision. So I said, just take that. That was the only seat available. Yes, ma'am.
Is your culinary program cooking this, or no?
They could if you had it. They're cooking the meal for the etiquette training, but at the conference center, I had to use their food, which is what the sponsorship was for. Yes, ma'am.
Do you give the industry alphas a goal to how many students to visit, or they just go no home?
Great question. I do not give them a certain number to visit, and I tell them if the booth looks bad, you don't have to go. Because that tells the kid, I didn't do the right job, I didn't do good enough. So some kids get 17 evaluations, some kids get 39. And I'm like, that means your booth wasn't attractive. And if you don't sell yourself correctly, you're not gonna get any bites in the employment world. So great question. All right, we're 2 minutes over. Thank you all so much. Y'all have a good day.